In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
A long time ago, and I'm talking like back in the late 80s, I was doing some part-time work for my Uncle Louie, who was a contractor. I have no idea how the subject came up, but during a break, the guys got to talking about a recently former worker of my uncle's who had been involved in some kind of accident. I seem to recall he fell off some scaffolding or something along those lines and ended up hurting his back. So the insurance company was getting ready to settle when somehow or other a lawyer got involved, who convinced the worker to get back surgery, which would help bolster his case to show just how injured he really was, which meant he would get even more money, which meant the lawyer would get even more money. So the guy did. Except the surgery didn't go quite to plan, and he ended up permanently disabled, facing a lifetime of pain. But the lawyer got his money and was able to walk away just fine. I remember thinking how stupid the whole thing was, someone permanently disabling himself when they could be working if they just hadn't been so stupid and so greedy, not to mention an attorney who made an awful lot of money for doing nothing, unless you count giving bad advice as doing something. That, in a nutshell, describes where Oregon is. We have agencies that want to get paid, but don't want to do the work, especially the work they were created to do. Because right now, the Oregon Department of Forestry, or ODF, is essentially bankrupt. What's worse is they have handicapped themselves. They are supposed to be making profits from selling timber rights on state lands, but instead have decided that's too hard and they'd rather not work. Especially when you've got far-left organizations which greedily make money off people not working. They convinced the ODF to pass a habitat conservation plan that stops the state from harvesting timber on its own lands, or at least the majority of it. And just like that lawyer's bad advice, they have now handicapped the ODF because now they can't even afford to pay their own bills, which is why there was a special session this Thursday to bail them out. The far left have turned all things environmental to a massive funding scheme. Just recently, Capitol Press investigated IRS filings by 20 so-called nonprofit environmental organizations operating here in the West. Those nonprofits have total net assets of almost $2 billion. And of course, if you've listened to iSpy Radio, you know that massive chunks of that have come from taxpayers, because they will sue states and federal governments to stop them from harvesting trees, suing to take out hydroelectric dams, which forces utility companies to install more green energy, it's not green, which are companies that just happen to be favorable to the left. But what's especially galling is that a huge amount of that $2 billion has been set aside into interest-bearing endowments to generate income. Well, isn't that nice? Taxpayer monies get socked away in a bank account to earn money for far-left organizations so they can afford to stop normal people from working, and that has now boiled over into the ODF, which can't even afford to pay their own bills, because they've decided to handicap themselves. To talk about that special session to bail out the Oregon Department of Forestry, I'd like to welcome Jen Hammaker, whose family has a long history in timber and fishing, and she now serves as the president of ONRI, that's the Oregon Natural Resource Industries, which is out there constantly standing up to the environmental nonsense that happens in Oregon. Jen, it is great to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I kind of wish it was under happier circumstances that we had some good news that suddenly Oregon is actually starting to harvest its own timber again. But instead, we're talking about this special session to bail out the Oregon Department of Forestry. So to get started, let's kind of give our audience a little bit of a refresher exactly what the Oregon Department of Forestry is, what they are, what they do, and what they are supposed to be doing to get their funding.
Yeah, so the Oregon Department of Forestry was created back in 1911, and they were given the county trust lands to manage, and their edict or their plan, management plan, was to harvest timber with all, you know, it's called the greatest permanent value. It's with the social, economic, and recreational benefits to all Oregonians. And in harvesting the timber, they get tax money from that, and they get tax revenue from that, and they are able to support themselves. They generate enough money to support themselves as well as the counties that they're managing their land for. So they're unique. They're the only department that generates their own revenue to operate.
So the legislature met on Thursday to pay off the bills the ODF is supposed to be able to pay. As you say, they're supposed to be a self-funding agency. That's how they were set up. They make money from the sale of the timber on those state lands, and but now they are effectively bankrupt, right? I mean, how, why is it they were not able to pay these bills?
Yeah, so ODF is insolvent, as far as I can tell. They have a, back in August, they asked for $47.5 million from an e-board, an emergency board, and they got that. And then in September, and then in October, they asked for $60 million from the Oregon's Treasury, and Oregon's Treasury simply told them no, because they could not give any assurances for repayment. And so that tells me that if they couldn't give assurances for repayment to the Treasury, that they either owe too much money or there's no money in there. So they're saying, or there's no timber to be harvested because there's no value. They have nothing to put it up against.
Well, if that was a business, that sure sounds like they're teetering on the verge of bankruptcy. So what has led up to this for an agency that was designed to not only be self-funding, but also funding these other public entities and services? It's kind of odd they have no money.
Yeah, well, it started with the Elliott. Elliott is our first state national forest. They closed down the Elliott with an HCP, which is a habitat conservation plan. Basically, it's a conservation plan for a certain amount of, you know, whatever you're applying for. You have to go to the federal agencies, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and then NOAA, and ask them for a HCP, and then you go through this process. Anyways, they put that on the Elliott. They also put another one on the in the private forest accord, which is private timberland. And this is just absolutely horrible. Somebody should sue over this. The private forest accord allowed the federal government to come in and literally take people's private property and turn it into conservation. And they didn't get compensated for it. But that took off hundreds of thousands of acres of private timberland. So we have 90,000 acres of the Elliott closed down. We have hundreds of thousands of acres of the private forest accord, private properties shut down. And then last March, the Board of Forestry decided that they were voting on an HCP for our state timberland. And so they closed down 57% of our state timberland to harvest also. So with those three combined, the amount of timber available has dwindled extremely.
Sure.
And so that's, you know, no timber, no harvest, no revenue.
Well, if they keep taking land away, making it unavailable for timber harvest, how do they think that they're going to be getting funded? I mean, that's how they make their money. Does this not seem to alarm anybody at the legislature that we have created this agency? Well, it's not created. We've allowed this agency to start marching itself towards bankruptcy. I would think somebody at the legislature would be concerned about that.
Yeah, well, this is twofold also, because we just talked about the acres or the timberland that's not available anymore because of decisions from policy and management decisions. But then you add in the forest fires. So 2020 Labor Day fires, we had a million acres burned up. This year, we had 2 million acres burned up. That's 3 million acres in 2 years. And those are the two biggest, fire seasons that we've had in Oregon. But that's still 3 million acres. And just to give you a little bit of a perspective here, the Labor Day fires, when they burned, that was 15 billion board feet of lumber that could have been made out of the timber that burned. And that could have built 1 million family-sized houses. So they passed this, they implemented this HCP, ODF did, way before the Board of Forestry, their governing body, voted to approve it. And by doing that, they entered into the HCP and the board didn't need to take any further action for the HCP to continue, which means that ODF staff, people that work at ODF, wrote state policy, and that is illegal. You cannot have staff writing state policy. And the reason why I say it's illegal is because they implemented it. They made it happen. And so what that does, it obligates future legislatures, future taxpayers.
Yeah, and it also totally gets around the legislature, which is the one that is out there supposed to be writing the laws and the policies that go with them. All right, everyone stay with us. Lots more to talk about with this Oregon Department of Forestry and the special session here. We'll do that with Jen Hammaker. She is the president of ONRI. You can visit them at onri.us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today with Jennifer Hammaker. She is the president of ONRI, that's Oregon Natural Resource Industries. They've been fighting Oregon's plan to, among other things, it's HCP that will abandon some 57% of the state forests. And also now this latest scheme, they've been trying to expose what is happening with the Oregon Department of Forestry, where they have bankrupted themselves. So, Jen, going into this special session, did you have any expectations on this? I mean, that really maybe this funding could be stopped, or at least that it would point out the futility of the HCP and that this is obviously going to bankrupt the Oregon Department of Forestry. I guess, what were you expecting out of this special session?
Oh, my gosh. So, well, first of all, our firefighters that were on the front lines during the Oregon's largest fire season, they worked tirelessly. One of them perished in the fires, which is just heartbreaking, of course.
Sure.
But, you know, these were men and women risking their own lives out there on the front lines with equipment, shovels, and everything else that you could imagine for months on end. And the way we repay them is by not paying them. So to me, this is a total failure on ODF's part. They should have been communicating their expenses to the legislature. They should have been making sure that these people were getting paid and paid on time. A lot of these people had to go out and get loans to pay their employees, and they're paying interest on those loans because we haven't paid, because ODF's failure and incompetence, if you ask me, to make sure that our firefighters, what are they going to do next year? Are they going to think, oh, well, maybe I should or maybe I shouldn't? I don't know. It cost me a lot of money to fight those fires last year. I mean, we need to be able to pay our debts, and we need to be able to pay our firefighters that put their lives on the line to fight these catastrophic wildfires. What I was hoping going into session yesterday was that this $218 million, and that just gets thrown around, $218 million for ODF. It was $122 million of it was forest cost related. So what I was hoping was that the legislature would appropriate that money, the $122 million, to pay for fire costs, including the contractors and our firefighters. And then they would negotiate, or they would somehow figure out not to give the rest of the money, the $117 million, and figure out a better way to hold ODF accountable. ODF should never have let this happen. And for the legislature to give money to ODF beyond what the fire costs are, to me, it should not have happened. ODF should be held accountable. Our state forester, Cal Mukamoto, and others should be held accountable for this discrepancy, for this negligence.
Well, especially the fact that this is an agency that is supposed to fund itself and have enough money left over after it funds itself to be paying all of the counties and the services, schools, pay for roads in those areas. I mean, there's a lot of things that this money generates and does, in fact, pay for. And here they are completely out of cash. So did you get a sense after either, you know, listening to the special session because it was, you know, streamed live, or maybe talked with people afterwards, did you get the sense that anybody walked away from that saying, oh my gosh, we've got to fix this problem with the ODF not being able to pay its own bills, when that's exactly what it's supposed to do?
Yes, I did. Most of the people that spoke during, you know, on the floor during the special session, they were pretty much in agreement. We need to get our contractors, our firefighters paid immediately. And then also every single Republican that was up there was talking about how we need to do better, how we need to come up with new policy, new management practices. And these are not new, by the way. These are policies and management of old. what's been happening lately is that ODF has been shutting down forest land. The federal government's been shutting down forest land. The shutting down of forest land just puts more fuel on the ground, and it causes bigger fires.
Right.
And also, I need to go back for a second. This HCP that was passed by the Board of Forestry, but also implemented over a year before the Board of Forestry approved it, is a 70-year plan. It's
right.
70 years. I have a 12-year-old. He'll be 82 years old when this thing is over. So I don't want to lose sight of that. That's 70 years of lost revenue from this HCP for counties, schools, and for ODF to operate itself. And now because we've closed all this stuff down, ODF does not have the revenue source. It does not, the forest no longer generate revenue enough for ODF to operate, which is also against their statute. They're in conflict of their statute. So this whole thing is just absolutely crazy. And that's why I keep saying ODF should not have gotten more money than they were needed for the pay our firefighters.
Do you know if there's any explanation as to what that extra money is going for? I mean, granted, we want to pay these contractors that literally risked their lives to be out there fighting these fires. You know, they were owed the money. I know that some of them had to take out loans to make ends meet until they got paid.
Yeah.
So did you get any sense as to what this extra money is for?
They're going to be putting it in different like funds, bankrolling. I mean, basically what the submitted documents say is that it's for operation for ODF, which is very strange to me because the Department of Administration is paying for ODF's payroll until the first of the year. So, and has been paying for their payroll until the first of the year. They have a $47.5 million loan out from the e-board from earlier this year. They had a $50 million e-board loan out at 6% interest. They tried to borrow another $60 million, and now they've got $218 million. And that's not even to talk about the money that is owed to them by the federal government. So on the books before the HCP was passed, and that was back in March, there was $152 million in accounts receivable, meaning that the federal government owed ODF $152 million for firefighting costs.
Hmm.
And then this year, just on the documents submitted for the special session, another $183 million for this year's fire costs from the federal government was owed to ODF. That's combined, it's $335 million. So they're asking for $218 million, and they're going to be receiving $335 million. So this isn't pencil.
Yeah, well, it doesn't. And you can certainly see when you start throwing these millions around, pretty soon they're billions. And then you look at what's happening on the federal level, it balloons into trillions. And this is why something like the Department of Government Efficiency is needed at the federal level. And we certainly need that now here in Oregon as well. All right, everyone, stay with us. It is time for a break. We'll continue this with Jen Hammaker. Talking today with Jen Hammaker. She grew up in a family with long ties to natural resources and saw all too often how the state seems to punish such industries despite society needing natural resources. And she is now the president of ONRI, that's ONRI for Oregon Natural Resource Industries. And Jen, during the break there, you know, Oregon had gotten $500 million to fight fires. I mean, does it really cost that much to fight fires?
No. No, it does not cost that much to fight for, not billions of dollars. Like this is absolute, this is, or millions of dollars like this. This is crazy. So literally the ODF is going to be receiving at some point $335 million from the federal services. They just got appropriated to them $218 million. That is over, that's close to $600 million. Plus, they got a $47.5 million loan, and the Department of Administration is paying their payroll until the first of the year. So, yeah, definitely $600 million. I mean, what the hell is going on here? This is absolutely atrocious. If they can't fight these fires for less than that, that's federal level kind of spending. So, I don't understand why. I think it's because I think our legislature, obviously they wanted to get our firefighters paid, but I think our legislature gave them this money without knowing exactly, or understanding, I guess, exactly what's going on here. This $600 million given to ODF is far and above what, so maybe that's how ODF is making their money now. So if I'm going to connect the dots, they've closed down our timberland, so you can't harvest timber, so there's no revenue. So they're going to, what, align with the federal government, and they're going to start charging taxpayers for their operations?
No.
I mean, that's how the federal government does it.
Yeah.
So I don't get it.
No, it doesn't make sense. The whole thing doesn't make sense. This is an agency that is designed to create funds, and instead all they're doing is creating these massive obligations that we're going to continue to have to pay for as taxpayers. It's like they want to fail. It's not like they don't know how to fight fires or prevent them. I mean, for heaven's sakes, Oregon experienced only one forest fire over 10,000 acres between 1952 and 1987. And it's not climate change. That's not the issue. Besides that, I mean, if you did believe this is all climate change related, then you would be doing more to fight fires, not less. You would be managing the forest that much more because timber builds up. You know, these trees shed their branches and stuff. It's like matchsticks on the ground. Of course you're going to have fires. So you should be in there managing it. So it's like they don't want to do the work and yet somehow still get paid for it. They don't want to go out there and harvest the timber. They don't want to go out there and manage the forest. And when these fires blow up, it's like they want them to spread, and it's like they want the forest to be destroyed. Does the legislature not see that this is what's happening here?
I think ODF itself is a rogue agency. I think they've done some things that have shown time and time again that they are a rogue agency, meaning that they're lawless. They just do what they want to do, regardless of statute, regardless of any whatever. They just do what they want to do. And now they're asking the taxpayers to pay for it. The second thing is that it seems to me that ODF, the Oregon Department of Forestry, is trying to align itself more and more and more and more with the federal, how the federal government manages their lands, which
or
is
doesn't.
Shut it down.
Yeah.
The lack of. And there's a couple examples out there of that. First of all, they passed HDPs all over the place, which closes down land for conservation purposes. But the crazy thing is that the animals that they're trying to protect within those HDPs burn up too.
Exactly.
When the forest fires happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So it leads to a perpetual result. It's the same result over and over again. We're going to close down this timberland over there. The spotted owls and the marbled murrelets and the pink-bellied newts, they're all going to be burned up. Oh, so we got to go over here and close down this area over here then because, you know, we just ruined that habitat. It's a perpetual result, and they keep getting money for it. It's absolutely ridiculous. But the other thing, too, is that I recently learned is that ODF pays to have contracts with our firefighters, right? And those firefighters, there's two shifts during a day. And this is for heavy equipment, but also for boots on the ground. But I was talking to a heavy equipment contractor, and he said that a couple years ago, they had a 12-hour shift, 12-hour, you know, day shift, 12-hour night shift, and they would get paid more on the night shift. Well, that has absolutely flip-flopped. Now they've made the day shift 18 hours, which is in direct conflict with the fire marshal's 16-hour work-rest ratio, which is 2-to-1. So it should be 16 hours, but they decided, nope, we're going to 18 hours because then we can just pay them less. And then they pay them for the night shift when the most effective and efficient firefighting is done because the humidity goes up, the dew point goes down, the sun goes down, so there's less heat at night, and then the winds calm down.
Yeah,
and
well,
so you get more done. Yep.
Yeah. Again, it sounds like they're trying to sabotage this. That doesn't make any sense. And especially normally at night times, you're paid more just as a matter of course because it's yep. less convenient. Real quick, we only got about a minute with you. It's pretty clear that ODF is incompetent on a number of levels. How do people get on that board of ODF? Are they appointed or are they hired directly? Because clearly new leadership is needed there.
No, they are appointed by our governor. Our governor appoints over 250 boards and commissions in the state of Oregon.
Mm. Yeah, well, mm-hmm. We definitely need new leadership at the very top for sure. Jen, unfortunately, we are up against the clock here with you. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And we're back. I'd like to welcome Ed Deal now. He is the representative from Oregon's House District 17, which takes up most of Marion County, east of Salem, and northern bits of Flint County. Ed, it is great to talk to you today.
Yeah, Mark, it's great to be back on the air with you.
Yeah, although it'd be nice that we're talking about some good news that, you know, the legislature has flipped Republican, that sort of thing. But no such luck. Instead, we're talking about this. Let's just spend even more of the taxpayer money without really thinking too much about this on an agency that is supposed to be out there generating its own income and making enough income that it generates money for other people as well. And yet they had to come hat in hand to the legislature, call in a special session in order to bail them out for these fire expenses. And so what were your takeaways from this session?
Yeah, the Oregon Department of Forestry is basically insolvent at this point. Not after last night, not after the special session. But yeah, we had a horrific wildfire season last summer. And it was well beyond the Oregon Department of Forestry's ability to fund, and which is not abnormal. We've had some bad fire seasons, but historically they've been able to borrow, to shift funds internally, to carry them over. Or they would go to the emergency board and ask for funding. And that's been a common occurrence. But this time around, you know, it was about $200 million shy of what they needed to operate. And the emergency board simply didn't have that money available. And so they tried to borrow some money from the state. That didn't work for some logistical reasons. And so it became apparent that in order to pay off the vendors, which they owe millions of dollars to, they had to come to the legislature and ask for more money out of the general fund. Fortunately, it was there because we generated more tax revenue than was forecast. So we had the revenue available.
Heaven forbid we put that aside for the future.
Heaven forbid. Well, we do. And that's the idea. And we carry it forward, and some of it goes into reserve. This was a case where we had vendors, regular, or a lot of them from Oregon, a lot of these small businesses that had to pay their own bills. Some of them mortgaged their homes in order to pay their own employees, and they've been waiting for months to be paid.
Well,
some of them are in my own district.
And I definitely think that ODF owed the money to these vendors, and they should be paid. I guess, you know, when I look at the overall scheme of what ODF is doing and how they have kneecapped themselves, literally putting themselves in a position to be insolvent because they don't want to do the work of harvesting timber anymore. They haven't come out and said that, hey, you know what, we just decided we're not going to harvest these trees anymore, period, and we're done with it. But that's pretty much clearly their goal. Especially when they've got the ability to manage forests. We did that for decades and decades, only had one major forest fire between 1952 and 1987. Were there ever any questions, or are there ever any questions at the legislature about, you know, maybe we should just manage forests a little better to prevent fire?
Oh, yeah. That's the real travesty, is that we have some of the most productive forests in the world.
Yes.
Beautiful forests. Some of them are right in my district. And instead of managing these forests for recreation and jobs and the health of our communities, we're locking them up and letting them burn. And part of this is driven by the federal government. We can talk about that, the certain laws and the way they're set up. But it's also driven by a state leadership that is unwilling to push back and unwilling to fight for what I believe is right. And we end up locking up these forests, and the feds are doing a poor job of managing the state forests. We're turning them into tinderboxes.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not just the forest land, it's the grasslands as well. You know, the BLM is looking at stopping grazing. Well, you know, there's an old adage, and there's a lot of truth to it. You either log it, graze it, or let it burn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying we need to cut every tree down, but we have to reduce the fuels and manage the forests and the grasslands in a way that minimizes wildfire risk. And amazingly, that's great for people and the economy and the health of those lands.
Yeah. Well,
win, win, win.
There was a major shift back in the day, and I forget exactly when it was. I think it was in the 80s, that was really exposed when there was a giant fire out at, I think it was Yellowstone. And at the time, there was this massive fire. And what came out of that was, well, the thinking now is that, you know, it used to be go put the fires out. Well, the forests actually need to burn, and it helps with the overall health of the forest. And so they had taken on this notion that we're going to take a hands-off view of the environment and just kind of let nature take its course. And of course, by then it had burned, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres, and that's what we see now. To me, it's better to not let the forest burn constantly like that, the way that we have, where they get to these out-of-control types of issues. But anyway, I'd like to come back to you about the management that we're seeing on the federal government. Real quick, what's the relationship between ODF and the legislature? Does it have any oversight on the ODF?
Well, in theory, we do. Yes, there is. And I think there's a lot of discontent. The leadership, at least on my side of the aisle, with the board and with the director, there's a lot of discontent. We do not feel that our forests, this beautiful resource, is being managed. We've turned a billion-dollar asset into a billion-dollar liability.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm looking at the board and the director, Cal, that we just do not feel are making good decisions. The sad part is I know people within the department. There's good people that work there. They want to do the right thing. They're as frustrated about this situation as we are.
Mm. Well, I would certainly hope so. It's unfortunate to see these developments. My suspicion is anyway, that it's by design and it's all about carbon credits. And we'll talk about that next with that deal. Everyone stay with us. Welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking to Ed Deal. He is the representative from Oregon's House District 17. That's most of Marion County east of Salem and bits of Linn County as well. And the legislature, in case you missed it, was called into special session to bail out the Oregon Department of Forestry, which is supposed to be self-funding and funding other agencies as well. And yet they have essentially become insolvent. Ed, before we get to the carbon credits issue, when you guys were there in the session and they called it into order, but then they immediately went into these committee hearings, which took all of the discussion about the nuts and bolts of what was going to happen out of the public eye. First, you know, from a public standpoint, that makes it hard for us to trust the outcomes without knowing what was being said and what was being discussed. Was there a reason those committee meetings weren't on camera? I mean, is that typical?
Well, no, it's not typical. It was for the expediency of the special session. And what they did is the public hearings were on Wednesday. So there was a chance for public review and comment on Wednesday during the normal Ledge Day session. But what's required for us to hear a bill in a special session is a committee has to refer the bill to the floor. So what they decided to do, instead of having this lengthy committee hearing called after special session, which would have extended the special session to a couple days possibly, they decided, let's do the public hearing and the public comment piece on Wednesday during Ledge Days, and then make the formal referral to the House floor just a quick closed session and get it done. And that was the idea. So, yeah, that allowed us to get the session done in about 3.5 hours.
Was there any discussion in the committee hearings that you know of that started to say, hey, this is going to be a long-term problem with the ODF if they're making themselves insolvent on purpose?
Yes, and I have not gone back and listened to those hearings. My understanding is, yes, those conversations did take place.
Good.
We know that we have to look at different ways of funding. There's not agreement on how that funding is done. Some people are calling for private, you know, the private entities should be putting up more money. Some of us are saying it's not the private forests that are burning. It's
right.
The public forests that are burning.
Yeah.
And the public forests are the ones that are being mismanaged.
It's kind of funny how when you own the land as a private forest entity, you don't want it to burn. You actually want to be able to manage that and harvest it. And
you want it to burn.
That's the model that the state ought to be following.
And when a fire starts on private land, I'm not saying private land doesn't burn, but they go after it aggressively.
Yeah, absolutely.
While the feds have a let it burn policy.
Yes.
The private lands have access. Public, though. Yeah.
Speaking of the feds there, you had mentioned in that last segment there that a lot of our land management or lack of land management is being driven by the feds, not just on the forest level, but also on the grasslands and whatnot. So can you fill in some gaps there as to how that impacts Oregon?
Well, there's a steady move to lock up these federal forests, and a lot of it's being driven by the Endangered Species Act and the Equal Access to Justice Act. And basically, that's kind of created a lawsuit factory. So when Oregonians try to, you know, selectively harvest on national forest land, it's almost always coming back with a lawsuit. The environmentalists are pushing back with a lawsuit, and it's all around the ESA laws and regulations. And that is blocking these projects, the harvest, that would reduce the fuels. And these are sustainable. We're trying to do sustainable harvesting here. This is, you know, fuel reduction, taking out, frankly, smaller logs. We have mills now that have been optimized to handle small logs. But the environmental attorneys, it's a great gig for them because they can sue the federal government. And then the taxpayers on the hook, not only to defend the suit, but also to pay them.
Yes. Yeah.
It is a lawsuit factory, and it's destroying our forests.
It is destroying the forests, and there has been a movement for well over a decade now that really the federal government should divest itself of all of its lands that are within these states. I mean, there are massive amounts of acreage held by the federal lands that for some reason they've decided to keep rather than give it to the states at the time of statehood, which is what happened east of the Mississippi.
Yeah.
West of the Mississippi is very different. Do you think that in this coming administration that Trump may change that he's going to want to divest federal lands either back to the states or start selling it off to private entities?
That's a great question. And I met with some legislators from Utah here recently, and they're bringing a suit to get the Supreme Court to make a decision on that very topic. And what they're doing specifically is they're asking the federal government, they're saying, look, you own a lot of Utah. We want our lands. We want public ownership of those lands locally. And specifically with BLM land. So they're asking the Supreme Court to make a decision. And, you know, it way back when, the federal government actually had a lot of land east of the Mississippi. They unloaded it. It was turned over to the local governments. West of the Mississippi, they didn't do that. But the way we read the Constitution and the intent, they should. It's not theirs for eternity.
Yeah.
They should be turning these lands over to the people that live and work there. And yes. I think the people that live and work in these lands are the best ones to manage it.
Yeah, well, I certainly agree. Ken Ivory was the one that started that years ago, and that blossomed into the American Lands Council. And I really hope Utah is successful with that. Although the one hesitancy I have with that is apparently Oregon can't manage its own land, so I'm not sure what to do with millions of more acres just handed to them by the feds. But I do think Trump may, in fact, get involved on that as well. So, all right, we did not get around to carbon credits. We'll deal with that next with Ed Beal. Stay with us. And we're back on our final segment now with Ed Beal. He's the representative from Oregon's House District 17. That's East Marion County and a little bits of northern Linn County as well. My old stomping grounds there. And Ed, we've been talking about this special session that was had to be called in because the Oregon Department of Forestry is insolvent. It did not have money to pay its bills for the contractors that helped put out the fires. But, you know, we were talking during the break there, and I think you said it exactly right, is that what has happened with the ODF and how we manage these lands or don't manage the lands, things don't make sense what they're doing doesn't make sense unless you want to eliminate harvesting forests. And I suspect that that is exactly the case. I have thought for some time now that all of this is about moving towards carbon credits where they don't manage the forest, where they don't harvest the timber, and instead they are selling carbon credits. And as we discussed last week with Craig Rucker, there are three different ways that you can do that on forests. One is you promise to not harvest the trees that are there, and that's one way to sell carbon credits. A second one is to go out there and plant trees where there aren't forests or haven't been for quite some time. And then the third way is after the trees burn down due to mismanagement or natural fires or whatnot, you can then sell them again. And my suspicion is that they essentially are incentivized now to let these forest fires burn because they can sell carbon credits once to promise not to harvest those. When they burn down, they can sell it again. And I was talking with Jen after the on-air conversation, is that it takes 30 to 40 years for a tree to come to maturity. Well, the way that carbon credits are set up, you sell them on a term basis, usually 5 to 10 years. Well, you could sell a carbon credit 4 times there five times. The first time to promise not to do it, to not harvest that, but then another 4 times every 10 years when those forests burn. So it feels like that's the direction they want to go with all of this.
There are definitely activists in this area that do want to eliminate logging. They don't hide it. They want to eliminate logging. And they have this, in my view, a fantasy vision of what these forests would be like if they were left to their own. And you know what they are when they're left to their own? Periodically, we have ravaging forests. I don't want to live that way. Mm-mm. Or ravaging forest fires. I don't want to live that way. I want to manage our forests for our benefit and our benefit of our kids and our grandkids. And that's active management. What's weird to me, you mentioned 3 ways. Right, to do these carbon credits. You know, there's a fourth way. The fourth way is to harvest these trees after they have gone through their peak growth, which is about 40 years, like Jen said. Harvest those trees, make lumber, make plywood, make mass plywood panels, build homes, and plant another tree. Why is that not considered in the same light as the other methods for carbon sequestration? Because I have stored all that carbon in a home and I've planted another tree. I'm maximizing the period that tree is capturing carbon in its peak growth years. Why is that not considered? The reason is because they don't want to harvest trees.
Yeah.
That's why.
Well,
they'd rather buy them from Europe, which is that's nonsense to me.
It is nonsense, and it does. You know, that's the only thing that makes sense is it's pretty clear from their actions that they have taken that they simply do not want to harvest these trees anymore. But this whole notion of carbon sequestration and CO2 as the enemy, it really proceeds from a false narrative that somehow carbon is the enemy. It's not. CO2 is not a pollutant. Yeah. It's a nutrient. Trees and other plants need carbon dioxide in order to make the oxygen that we need. So the whole thing is nonsense. The other issue, though, is that if that's their goal, is to move into carbon credits, well, if Trump eliminates all this net zero spending that is fueling some of this as well, I can see where these carbon credit schemes would suddenly fall apart where businesses no longer need them. It's kind of like the train has derailed before it may even leave the station. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, if that happens, it definitely changes the game. Now, I don't know if there'd be a move. There was a move to create public markets, basically for environmental corporations that would trade in carbon credits. That was delayed, I believe. So we have to make sure this doesn't just move out of the government entity and go into public where people are taking millions of dollars of public or of money from investors and then buying these lands. So I hope the Trump administration can bring this to an end and don't allow those environmental corporations, I'm struggling on what they're called right now, to be publicly traded. Which would just facilitate and aggravate this problem.
I think it would. I guess, you know, if somebody wanted to do that on their own private land, and somebody is willing to fall for it, you know, it's the Bernie Madoff of carbon credits and environmentalism, as that you're able to convince somebody to do that. But yeah, you're right. I think we need to try to avoid that with any kind of public lands transfer to private entities. But anyway, in a perfect world, what would have come out of that legislature if Republicans had been in charge?
If Republicans had been in charge?
Yeah, overseeing the ODF.
Well, for one thing, we would have completely different leadership on the Board of Forestry. We would not have the makeup of the board that voted for the Habitat Conservation Plan. We would not have Cal in place. We would be establishing good neighbor authority, I think, aggressively with the federal government to allow the state to manage those national forest lands. And what we would see over a period of time is we would see better forest management, better fuel reduction, more access to these forests, an aggressive policy when a fire starts, you put it out. So I believe under Republican leadership, what we would see is healthier forests that never have these massive wildfires in the first place, and we're not having to foot the bill for the Oregon Department of Forestry. In fact, they're generating revenue for the state.
Yeah, which is exactly what they are intended to do, and what you're describing as a healthy environment, which used to be the goal for environmentalism, but unfortunately not so much anymore when money can be made. Ed, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Things like the carbon credit schemes are why Republicans keep losing. For decades, they have convinced themselves they need to appear friendly to the environmentalists. Environmentalism is not the same as conservation. Conservation is caring for the land and protecting it for future generations. Environmentalism is a mental disorder, akin to Marxism, that will hand the next generation a burned-out shell of what used to be a forest, and along with a bill to pay for it. But because so many Republicans vote for environmental programs, they keep funding the other side. Do Democrats vote for hundreds of millions, billions of funding for pro-life issues, for Second Amendment issues, for pro-Christian organizations? No. Until you break that free cash from taxpayer cycle, courtesy of the Democrats in office, Republicans will continue to lose because that money finds its way into far-left activist hands who ensure that Democrats keep getting reelected, who ensure the money keeps flowing. It's time to get smart, which is why we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.